So we are holding on Chaf Aleph Amud Beis, the seventh line of the widest lines. Still talking about the dinim of a king. The Mishnah had said the case of Sefer Torah l'shmo, that he has to have a Sefer Torah written in his name. Thomas, we learn in the Braille, so well, actually, no, he can't just pride himself on the Sefer Torah that he inherited from his ancestors. He needs one that's written specifically for him. So,
do we have a time? I need a...
In general, they've never found any Sefer Torah from those from that period. The oldest complete Sefer Torah they've ever found is from the 1200s, and fragments of Sfarim they've found. You know, you have Dead Sea Scrolls, you have other such manuscripts from the late period of the Bais Sheni or whatever, but yeah, I haven't found anything from the Bais Rishon. Amar Rava, even if a person's ancestors left him as an inheritance of Sefer Torah, mitzvah lichtiv mishaloi, he has a mitzvah to write one of his own. Shenema, as the pasuk says, v'atakis v'lachem as a shira, as the pasuk says, now write for yourselves the shira, which either the shira generically means the Torah, or maybe the shira means specifically the shira of Hazinu, but the Rambam points out that connection in Tokhah Sefer Torah, that the fact is you're not allowed to write individual portions of the Torah. If you're going to write Hazinu, it means, it presupposes that you're going to write the rest of the Torah. So therefore it means, yeah, you have a mitzvah to write a Torah.
Why is it just Hazinu?
In context, Moshe is saying, now write for yourselves this shira, meaning Hazinu, that he's about to tell them. But the point is, even if you say that the shira, narrowly speaking, means Hazinu, you can't only write Hazinu, so therefore, necessity means the whole Torah.
So as
the other way, because it means you write the shira, because it's important to the Lamanti Eli Ashira Zazla'et, so it'll be a witness against the Jewish people, for the Jewish people, showing them what's going to happen in the future. But another way of looking at it is that the shira generically means, that the shira in a broader sense means the Torah. Okay. Eisve Abaya, however, Abaya asks, I mean, what do you mean everybody has a mitzvah to write their own Sefer Torah? We just said that by a king, that a king has to have a Sefer Torah written for his own name, and he can't just pride himself on the one that was written by others, implying Melachay in Hediyat Loy. It sounds like only a king is obligated to do that. A commoner is not obligated. Hello? The answer is Leitzricha L'shtei Torahs. No, but the difference is that a king, it's not just enough for him to have one Torah, he actually needs two. The Chibetanya, as we learn in a Braise, so when the Pasuk says, V'chosav Leitz Mishneh V'gomer, the Pasuk says that he should write for himself Mishneh HaTorah HaZos. So Mishneh implies a double copy, and it implies a double one, another repetition, another two copies. Therefore, it says, therefore, Kosev L'shmo Shtei Torahs. Therefore, it means he has to have written for himself two Torahs. One which comes in and goes out with him. In other words, wherever he goes, the Torah goes with him. And another one which sits in his, another one which is kept in his treasure. The Rambam actually understands it, but it doesn't have to be really that both of those two are written specifically for him. If he inherited one from his ancestors, that's fine. That's one that he has for that purpose. Then another one he has to have written for himself. He has to have two. He has to have two. Unlike a regular commoner, only needs one. He needs to have one new one written for himself, which is the same as every other year. The difference is the king needs another one if his ancestors didn't leave him one, then he has to have two written, as opposed to a head, he would only need one.
Do we know how big that Sefer Torah is?
Oysa kamin kameya, well that's what we're gonna say now. You make that Torah like a kameya, like an amulet, but Torah b'zroya, and he hangs it up from his arm. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Shivisi Hashem l'negbi tzomid, I place Hashem before me always. Ki mimini bal emot, because he's at my right side, I will never falter. Implying that he has to have the Sefer Torah always as his right side. So we talked briefly yesterday, there are Rishonim who learn that not necessarily that one that he hangs from his arm is not necessarily a full Sefer Torah. It would be very difficult. Now the Marashal says yes. Marashal says that yes, it was written in micro lettering, and therefore it would be small enough for him to be able to write. But a number of Rishonim say that no. They say it may have been just the Aseret Adibris, it may have been a listing of the Tayag Mitzvahs, I mean, whatever, some summary like that. And then there are Rishonim who talk about the Meiri talks about that maybe it doesn't necessarily literally mean that he has it hanging from his arm. Maybe what it means is he always has to have it carried around wherever he goes. So like he'll have a valet whose job it is to always carry it with him wherever he goes to make sure that it's always someplace nearby. The Braith continues, however, there's an exception. He doesn't go with the Sefer Torah into the bathhouse or into the bathroom. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, it says that he should be with him, that he should be able to read it, implying Mokom Aroi Likris, but he only takes it into places where it's suitable to read from it, so not places like that. Now that we mentioned the Pasuk as Mishneh HaTorah Azois, we're going to mention a very interesting concept that according to one opinion, we learn from that topic. Historically, we know that we have the square letters that we use for Hebrew since the Jewish people came back from Babel, which is called Ksav Ashuri, and we're going to see soon why it's called that. But then you can find inscriptions from the times of the first Beis Hamikdash. And on coins from the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, you can find a different script which is called Ksav Ivri. You can find you look on the internet. You can find examples of Ksav Ivri, and not really like cuneiform, but there's
a form of cuneiform.
No, not really at all. Cuneiform is the width. No, it's not. Cuneiform is a whole different writing method that was used by the Assyrians and the Babylonians and whatever. No, this is the letter. Some of the letter forms are similar to the ones in Ashuris. They're different. They're more like adapted for scratching on stone rather than writing on parchment or whatever. That's what we're going to discuss. But there's examples of it. So the letters are more angular. They look like broken. They're more like rough strokes rather than the nice clean strokes of Ashuris. The Gemara is later on going to call it Royis, which means like broken. So the question is, what's the deal with those two scripts?
Royis. So there's something called ruins also that is later.
No, ruins. That's something else. That's a different.
Do you think the word comes?
I don't know.
Okay.
I doubt it. Okay.
Those are
scripts that the Germanic people used. It was a similar kind of thing. They took Latin scripts and adapted it into something that could be more easily scratched on stones or whatever. Okay, whatever. Anyway. We'll learn this piece of Gemara. That'll help answer your question. Originally, when the Torah was given to the Jewish people, it was given to them in Ksav Ivri and in Lashon Kodesh.
And in Lashon Kodesh?
So it was written, the language was Lashon Kodesh. The script was Ksav Ivri, which is that script that Aaron just showed us an example of. Chosra v'nitna lehem me Ezra v'ksav Ashuris v'Lashon Aram. Then in the times of Ezra, the Torah was re-given in Ksav Ashuris. The script changed to become Ksav Ashuri, the square letters that we're familiar with, v'Lashon Aram, and in the Aramaic language. In the end, they picked out, meaning the Pashas, the Nevi'im, the Chachamim of that time, the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, ended up picking for the Jewish, maybe it means the Jewish people themselves picked, Ksav Ashuris v'Lashon HaKodesh. They said, kind of a compromise, we're going to take the new script, but we're going to keep the old language, Lashon HaKodesh. Hold on. Can we learn? We'll see what gets answered. Hello. They left over Ksav Ivri, this ancient script, and the Aramaic language. That their Torahs are going to be written in that. Man Hedyotis, who were the Hedyotis we mean by that? It means the Kusim, the Samaritans. And in fact, Ada Yomazer, the Samaritan Torahs, are written in a variation of that script that Aaron was just showing us. And they're written in a dialect of Aramaic, Samaritan Aramaic, they call it. My Ksav Ivris, what is the Ksav Ivris? Omer of Chista Ksav Libuna. It means Libuna script. What is Libuna? Rashi says it means largish letters like the kinds that they write in Timaeus and Mezuzahs. Tosfos gives a couple of other possibilities. Libuna might mean that you have like hollow letters, like the letter is formed of the white space on the parchment rather than from the ink. Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. Tosfos says that maybe Libuna is the name of a place that such script was used. There's different other explanations also, including an interesting one there's an interesting one that I think Marsha talks about, that he says that Libuna might be, one second, Libuna might be related, no, but it could mean a place where it was a place in the world where such script was used, and then the Torah was given it. Hold on. Anyway, Marsha talks about that Libuna might be related to the name Lavan. Maybe it's a script that originally was used by Lavan. By Lavan and his descendants. Hold on. Tanya, Rabbi Yosi, Now, so we have to figure out, we're gonna talk about how the script could be changed. That's great. We'll get to that in a few lines, and then we'll talk about the ins and outs of this. So a good deal of ink has been spilled on this piece of Gemara. Tanya, Rabbi Yosi, Roy Hoya Ezra should not have been Torah al Yod of Israel. Ezra would have been worthy that the Torah should have been given to the Jewish people through him. Umola like Kodma Moshe, except that Moshe preceded him. Moshe lived 1,000 years before Ezra, so by the time Ezra came around, the Torah was already given.
So he was not
he was on a great enough level that he could have been. And how do we know this? Moshe Omer Moshe Olo al Alakim. By Moshe it says he went up to Hashem. To Har Sinai, but Ezra Omer uses the same expression. Who Ezra Olo mi Bavel? He went up from Bavel, implying Ma'aliyah Ha'amakan Torah, just like by Moshe, the going up is to receive the Torah and give it over to the Jewish people. Af Aliyah Ha'amalahalan Torah. So also by Ezra, when it says Who Ezra Olo mi Bavel, it doesn't just mean geographically he moved from out to Israel to Bavel. It means that he actually gave the Torah. And Moshe, you find another similar thing in Pesukim between Moshe and Yeshua. By Moshe, it says, last week's parasha, that Hashem commanded me at that time to teach you Chukum Mishpatim. By Ezra, it describes that Ezra prepared his heart, he readied himself, Lidresh Torah Hashem Alekov, to darshan, to teach the Torah of Hashem, to do and to teach among the Jewish people, Chukum Mishpatim, the same Chukum Mishpatim that it says by Moshe. So in other words, the point is he was on the same level as Moshe. The Afa Pishala Nitna Torah Yodo, even though it's true historically Ezra lived 1,000 years after Moshe, so the Torah couldn't be given through him because it was already given through Moshe. Nevertheless, he did have the distinction that Nishana Yodo Hakasav, that he was the one through whom the script was changed. So this is what we're saying. The Torah was originally given in Ksav Ivri. Ezra was the one who was authorized to make the change that from now on it's going to be a different script, Ksav Ashuri.
You're saying the Torah was finished and come out of
information. But in a certain sense, nobody has a nevuah of the level of Moshe. But different people can have. There can be, as Shlomo HaMelech, for example, was as great a chacham as Moshe. The Rambam described that Mashiach is going to be a navi almost like Moshe, and a chacham greater than Moshe. So yeah, you have in certain ways.
Fine,
but the point is that the point is you can have in individual things. There can be people who equal Moshe's accomplishments in nevuah, not like Ham Navi Yisrael Moshe. So we're saying over here that Ezra's chus was that the script was changed through him.
But if the Torah was given the Moshe in a certain way, but that Hashem wanted,
yeah.
So what was the reason they had to change it?
So you're asking what's the reason? So first of all, Rashi says over here.
How can you change?
Hold on a moment. Okay. So the question of how. So first of all, Rashi says over here on the top of the next Omud that it was changed through a malach, as we're going to see in a minute. The first time the script was ever used was the famous story when Belshazzar has his party with the Caleb of the Beis Mikdash, and all of a sudden a hand comes and starts writing on the wall, Menei Menei Tekelo Parasin, and nobody understands. Why did nobody understand? Because it's a new script nobody had ever seen before. This was meant as a message min hashamayim that this from now on is going to be the new script used for things of Kedusha.
Oh, we didn't know that.
We're going to discuss it. It's happening in Belshazzar's palace. It's to give him the warning.
Belshazzar
is the king. He's the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar.
What was the Navi that was there?
It wasn't. They called in Daniel to interpret it.
Daniel.
But then we're going to see soon. So therefore, with Ruach HaKodesh, he realized that this means, besides that the Eibishter is giving Belshazzar a warning, telling him as a punishment for you being having the chutzpah to use the kelim of the Beis Mikdash, you're going to be defeated and killed, and your kingdom is going to go over to Mordechai Paras. Besides that, the fact that it was in this new script was meant as a simon min hashamayim that it's time to change the script. Now, what's the reason behind it? So different Sfarim talk about it. For example, the Sefer Ikrim says that it was meant as to remind us that we were in Golos Bavel and to give thanks to the Eibishter that we came out of Golos Bavel. So therefore, we have, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that this new script came from Asher, which is Asher is Bavel, same general geographic area. Because again, where's the first time it was shown is on the wall of the palace in Bavel. So therefore, it's meant as a simon to us. It meant as a sign of to thank the Eibishter who brought us out of Golos Bavel. In other Sfarim, it talks about a similar idea, by the way, that for the same reason, that's why at that time also we took over the names of the months from Bavel. We took over the names of Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, etc. Come from the Babylonians. Same idea.
Belshazzar was the last king of Bavel.
Belshazzar is the last king of Bavel. Yeah. after it begins Golas part of the mother. Yeah.
Remind us that
we were freed from Golas Babel. Yeah.
When
it does that. Then the Babel was destroyed, and then afterwards part of the mother took over. That's when the Sokodesh made the proclamation that the second Mikdash can be rebuilt, and eventually they started on it, and then it was interrupted, and then 18 years later they finished it. So yeah. Anyway, so therefore, sort of.
Did the warning do anything then?
The warning? What? No, the deed was already done. I mean, he honored Daniel for interpreting it, but it's too late already.
He's already.
Okay.
So it wasn't like a warning, forecast.
Yeah. No, he didn't. He took them to his treasuries or whatever. He never actually used them. Belshazzar was the first one to actually use them, because the Gemara tells us elsewhere in Megillah that he miscalculated and thought the 70 years of Golas Babel are over and nothing's happened. There's no Gola, so nothing's going to happen. Therefore, I'm safe. Sancheir was 100 to 150 years before that, but this method was destroyed in his time. Okay. Anyway. There's other reasons, there's other ideas also. I mean, the Gemara itself is going to tell us, we have another opinion, that originally the Torah was given in Ksav Ashuri, as we have it now, but then because the Jewish people sinned, then it was changed into Ksav Ivri. So then, that's the second opinion we're going to have in the Gemara in a minute. But the point is, even according to this first opinion, it could be that also, as a symbol of the fact that Jewish people are having a new beginning now, with the second Beit HaMikdash, then the Eved just said, we're going to change the script. There's other possibilities also. There are Rishonim who learn that the first Luchos were written in Ksav Ashuri, and the second Luchos after the Chet Ha'Egel are written in Ksav Ivri. And maybe also, or maybe both Luchos were written in Ksav Ashuri, but Sifrei Torah after that were written in Ksav Ivri until this change. The Chassam Sofer talks about an interesting idea. He says, you know, there's a lot of things that we learn just from the shapes of the letters and from the tagim on the letters, as we know. Ksav Ivri doesn't have tagim, only Ksav Ashuri does. So he says, the same way as eventually you had the Mishnah and later on the Gemara and all the Torah Shabbat Peh were written down because the Yidden were forgetting it, this may have been a similar kind of thing. Up until then, you had Ksav Ashuri was meant to be basically Baal Peh. You had the Luchos were written in it, but basically the day-to-day Sifrei Torah that everybody learned from would have been written in Ksav Ivri, because the secrets of Ksav Ashuri was meant to be Baal Peh. Now, when they're coming back from Golas Babel, there's a concern that those details are going to be forgotten. Therefore, the Eved says through Daniel and through Ezra that it should be changed to Ksav Ashuri. It's the first stage of writing down Torah Shabbat Peh.
Mentions
the story with Belshazzar, doesn't go into the details, but okay, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, how do we know the script was changed? Shenema, as the Pasuk says in Ezra, Uksav HaNishtavon, the Pasuk is describing a letter that was written, the writing of Nishtavon, the simple meaning of Nishtavon means the letter, but Nishtavon is Malachan Shinui. So it means the script that was changed, Kostav HaRomis, the Metogam HaRomis, it was written in the Aramaic script and translated into the Aramaic language. So we see that they were starting to use that script in that time, Ksav Ashuri. And then you have another pasuk in Daniel in that story of Belshazzar. The pasuk says, after the writing is on the wall, like calling Ksavah l'mikra, they were not able to read the script, or Pishra l'idah l'malka, and to inform the king of what it means, of the interpretation of it. Now, why not? Because it's a new script. Nobody recognized it. Like calling means they weren't able. And then you have yet another pasuk, which is why we're bringing this in, because in connection with the pasuk that we mentioned before, v'chosavas mishnah Torah hazois, it says by the genium of a king that he should write mishnah Torah hazois. This implies ksav haroi l'ishtanis. This is the word mishnah Torah implies that the Torah is written in a script which eventually is going to be changed. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu himself, when he writes in Parashas Shoftim, in that David's dictation, that the king is supposed to write Mishnah HaTorah Hazos, the word Mishnah HaTorah implies that this script, one day, the David is going to inform through the Nevi'im of that time that that script is going to be changed. When did that happen? In the times of Ezra. And that's why we're crediting Ezra with it. So the question is, Loma Nikra Ashuris? Why is that script called Ashuris? Cholei Mar Ma'asher, because it came up with them from Asher, from Babel. Because again, the first time it was ever written, for public consumption anyway, was on the wall of the palace over there. Because Asher is, strictly speaking, Asher is northern Iraq and Babel is southern Iraq, but they were all part of the same empire, and there are a few places where the Pesukim use them kind of interchangeably. Okay. Now that's one opinion. Tanya, then we learn another opinion. We learn in a Braisa, Rebbe Omer, B'tchila B'Ksav Nitzna Torah L'Yisrael. No, the script Ksav Ashuri is the original one that was used to give the Torah to the Jewish people. Kivin Chachotu, but then after they sinned, Nefach Lahem L'royitz, it turned into a royitz. Royitz explains, Lashem Tiratz Oyev, it means like something broken or forgotten. They forgot, Sav Ashuri. And therefore they started using Sav Ivri, which is like a simplification, or like maybe after the Chetah Egel, maybe after the whatever, yeah, after the Chetah Egel, especially according
to learn a new language.
Not to learn a new script.
Yeah.
In other words, no. There's no question that the common people use. There's no question that they use Ksav Ivri. Everybody agrees they use Ksav Ivri for common writing and inscriptions and coins. In fact, the Rambam writes in one of his Tshuvas, he says, why is it that throughout even the second Beis Mikdash, long after they started using Ksav Ashuri for Sifrei Torah and whatever, they still use Ksav Ivri on coins? He says, forget, because of the kedusha of Ksav Ashuri, they didn't want to use it on coins and then that are just going to be spent and taken into the bathroom or whatever. So they continue to use Ksav Ivri, which has no kedusha. So therefore, according to the first opinion, but even according to the second opinion, no, the Torah was originally given in Ksav Ashuri, and just the Edrash made them forget it. Halacha. It's a matter of history. It's not a matter of halacha. So Netzach Lan L'Royitz, it turned into something that was broken and forgotten. And Royitz also described the script itself, which is made out of like broken-looking lines. Yeah. Kivin Shechazru Behem, and then when the Jewish people did Tshuva at the time of the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, Hechzir Elohem, the Eved restored them that swift, and from then on they continued using it. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Navi Zechariah, who lived at that time, says in Nevuah, Shuvu Levitzorah, and return to the fortified place, meaning to Yerushalayim, Asire HaTikva, you who were in prison but had hope that you're going to come back, meaning the people who were in prison in Babel, and they had a hope that they're going to come back and build the Beis Mikdash. Gamayoyim, Magid Mishnah, Oshiv Loch. Now also, today, I will return you Magid Mishnah, the telling of the Mishnah, meaning again, Mishnah Torah Azot, we said the script was changed. This script that the Ksav Ashuri that you originally had, and you forgot that you, according to the second opinion, and you forgot, now you're going to have it back. So according to that, Lama Nikoshma Ashuris, so according to that, why is that script called Ashuris? It didn't come from Ashur, it came, the Torah was originally given in it by Har Sinai. The reason is Shemo Sheres Tiktav, because it's clear and it's clear and precise in its writing. Ashuris, yeah, more than Ksav Ivri. Again, Ksav Ivri, you saw the example before that he showed you. Look, it's angular, it's kind of ugly and whatever, as opposed to Ksav Ashuri is beautiful and neat and yeah.
Especially like why now that we're back in Gaza, we had to, you know.
Because after they first, at that point, Rebbe is not necessarily completely disagreeing with the first opinion over here that what Rebbe Yossi said. He may agree that he has to agree with Pashtus that the script was changed in the times of Ezra. The Novi Zechariah is saying that it should be changed, and Ezra went and accomplished that. The point is, once he did that, then that's how it stayed. Even though it's true, we lost the second Beis Mikdash afterwards, but that wasn't lost.
An incredible accomplishment.
Okay. Then we have a third opinion. Rav Shimon Elazar, Omer Mishum Rav Elazar Ben Parcha, Shama Mishum Rav Elazar Hamodoi. A third opinion. No, Ksav Zeh Lo Nishtana Kol Iker. The writing that was used for Sefer Torah was never changed at all. So not it was originally given in Ksav Ivri, not it was given in Ksav Ashuri, and then that was forgotten, and they went to using Ksav Ivri for a few hundred years, and then they went back to Ashuri. No, it always they used for Sefer. Again, even this opinion wouldn't say they used Ksav Ivri for everything. Again, there's no question. We have inscriptions, we have coins, we have whatnot that are written in Ksav Ivri. But for Divrei Kedusha, he's saying they always used Ksav Ashuri. This third opinion there. Shenema Vavei Ha'amudim, as the Pasuk describes in the Mishkan, it describes the hooks of the pillars. Just like the pillars never changed shape, so also the vav never changed shape. And the point is, the word vav, the letter vav itself looks like a hook. If we're using the word vav to describe hooks, it means the vav never changed shape.
Meaning
Ksav Ashuri, as opposed to Ksav Ivri. In Ksav Ivri, a letter vav looks more like a letter Y, which is not what the hooks were shaped like in the Mishkan. And you have another pasuk that says in the Megillat Esther, "Vela Yehudim k'ksavim b'chiloshoinam," that the Mordechai wrote all the letters he wrote to the Jewish people in their script and in their language, implying maloshoinim l'nishtana k'ksavim l'nishtana. Just like the language of the Jewish people didn't change, it was always Lashon Kodesh. So also their script didn't change.
So why do we point?
Again, because they used it. There's no question they used it for Divrei Chol. Here we're talking about what they used for Divrei Kodesh, what they used for writing Sefer Torah. And then books of Nahum, whatever. According to him, they always use Ksav Ashuri. So according to him, what are we doing with the pasuk as Mishnah Torah? We said before, l'shtei Torah. That means that teaches us the king needs to have two separate Torah. Achas shiyotzev nechnesas imay, one that goes in and out with him, that goes wherever he goes. Achas shemunachas lebeis gnozav, and another one that he keeps in his treasury. And we said oisa shiyotzev nechnesas imay, the one that's always going around with him. Oisa to come in kameya, he makes it like an amulet. V'tolav izroya, and he hangs it from his arm. Shenema shiviti yeshem v'negvisav. So he carries it with him all the time. So the question is, okay, according to the other opinions, what are we doing with the pasuk shivisi Hashem l'negdi samid? We don't necessarily see from that they b'chlal may not even be saying that the king necessarily needs two sifrei Torah. They're darshaning from the word Mishnah Torah as though the script was changed at some point. So according to them, a king doesn't necessarily need to have two. He doesn't necessarily need to have one that he carries around with him all the time. What do they do with the pasuk shivisi Hashem the negdi samid?
Which one? I mean, if there's one, why wouldn't they say it carries with him? Why would
because you could assume that he has a separate. You wouldn't have to assume that it goes with him all the time. The hoyseima, fine, it should be with him. Not necessarily that he hangs it literally from his arm, that it's literally always at his right side. The hoyseima, it should be somewhere around that you should be able to read from it. And the truth is, yeah, I mean, Marshal and Marshal discuss at some length what the Gemara is asking. Is the Gemara saying, according to these opinions, maybe he shouldn't need two Sifrei Torah? Or is it saying, fine, he needs two Sifrei Torah, according to everybody, but not necessarily do they have to be with him? Anyway, what do they do with the Pasuk Shavuot Sesh on the Negdi Sabbath? The answer is, Rahum Ribori Kidra of Chana Babizna. They use it to teach us what Rav Chana Babizna taught. The Omer of Chana Babizna, Omer of Shimon Chassidah. When a person davens, he has to picture it as though the Shechina is in front of him. I place Hashem before me always. So therefore, that's what we learn. It means that you have to always picture that the Eibishter is always in front of you, and particularly when you're davening.
So what is the Shevisi?
So that's Shevisi, I place. No, Shevisi is a Hebrew word meaning place. Yeah. Okay. Fine. The question is now, going back to the story of Belshazzar and the writing on the wall. So we're saying, according to the first opinion, or even according to the second opinion, we're saying they couldn't read the script because nobody recognized it. According to Rav Yossi, such a script had never been used before, at least not for public consumption, at least not since the first locus. According to Rebbe, also, it hadn't been used for a long time. According to Rav Elazar Hamudoi, who says that they always use it, my like Rav Shimon Dama Savzal Ishtana, according to Rav Shimon Elazar, that says that they never changed, my like calling Savzal Mikra, then why couldn't anybody in Belshazzar's palace read the script? Amar Rav Begimatri Ichtid Lahayim. So Rav says because it wasn't written out in the actual letters, Mene Tekeel Parasim. It was written in gematria, and by gematria, the gematria in Gemara terminology doesn't always mean what we think of gematria as numerical values. It can also include various kinds of codes. For example, atvash. So it said yatas idach puch gamat, which is mene tekele parasin in atvash. So yuds instead of the mem, yuds instead of the mem, tesses instead of the nuns, and so forth. So yitach idach puch gemat. So now they see that on the wall, and they have no idea what it means. My potash lahu. So what did Daniel when they brought him in? What did he explain? As the pasuk says, he told them it stands for mene to cable parsin. And by the way, I mean a bunch of people point out also not in classical Meforshim really, as far as I know, but a bunch of more modern commentators point out the words mene and tekel and parsin all also are different kinds of coins or weights. So everybody may have had no idea what the why is. He's writing the names of various coins on the wall. But what does Daniel explain to them? It means Minei, means Minoel Akoma Chusach Bahashla Maslach. It means the Eibishter has counted out your kingdom and decided it's over. The 7 years have passed. Your kingdom is over. 7 years of Golas Babel. Well, not of Golas Babel, actually, but of the Yirmiyahu had said in Nevuah. And they had said in the war that there's going to be 70 years. When the 70 years were supposed to begin and end, nobody was really sure. One possibility is that it began from when Nebuchadnezzar became king. From when he became king until the party of Belshazzar's attack was 70 years. That's the thing. That was Belshazzar's mistake. He saw 70 years have passed, no Geula yet. He figured, that's it. There's not going to be any Geula. The Jewish people are stuck in Gullus. There's never going to be another Beis Mikdash. I may as well take the Kalim that my grandfather, Nebuchadnezzar, captured from the Beis Mikdash and use them for my party.
That was 70 years.
So 70 years after Nebuchadnezzar became king. So therefore, so now Daniel comes and tells him, yeah, Menei means Menoah L'Kol Malchus. That's the Eidrish that's counted out your kingdom, the Hashlam Ochloch, and that's it, it's done. Tekel, the word tekel means tekilta b'maznaya, you've been weighed in the balance, v'ishtkach haskhasu, and you've been found that you're lacking, you're not deserving to continue being king. You, Belshazzar, are not deserving to continue being king. And when he says uparsin, the last word of it was uparsin, but actually when Daniel explains it, he explains it as preis, which means split. Now, parsin is like a double splitting. It means prisas malchusach, your kingdom is going to be split up. It's going to be divided up. You hear us the Mordei Paras. It's going to be given to Mordei Paras.
Any orders need for that?
He's 40.
He didn't risk his life.
I don't know. I mean,
the truth.
Yeah, he told the truth.
Truth.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, whatever. That night, Belshazzar was killed. Same. Okay.
So that night.
That night, Belshazzar was killed. I don't know, there's different versions of whether he was killed by Kurdish and Dagobish soldiers, or maybe by one of his own men, whatever. Anyway.
Yeah, he didn't wait more than 24 hours.
Yeah. Okay. So according to Rav, that's why they couldn't understand it. Not because they couldn't recognize the script, but because all of a sudden they see on the wall over there, yatas, whatever, and they had no idea what it meant. Yeah.
So that was what? It was the same letters.
So it was the same letters, but a message that they couldn't read.
Why was it written
In order so that they wouldn't know, and only Daniel would know, and he could do it, and he could...
And what
language
was it?
It was in Hebrew. Well, no, it's an Aramaic. My name and age of Caleb Pirates in his Aramaic. Okay. Shmuel says another possibility. It was written Mimtos Ninkufi A'alaran, which means it wasn't written across Minei, Tekel, or Parasin. It was written downwards. Mem Nun Aleph, Tuf Kuf Lamed, Vav Pei Resh, Samach Yud Nun. So if you read across, it looks like a meaningless word. Mimtos Ninkufi A'alaran. And again, therefore, they couldn't understand it. There's a famous painting by the artist Rembrandt from a few hundred years ago.
Yeah.
There's a famous painting of this scene, and he has it written like that. Because he was friendly with Reb Menashe ben Yisrael, and Reb Menashe must have told him what the Gemara says over here. Reb Yechanan says a third possibility. It was written Anam Anam Lakat Nisrufu. Each word was written backwards. So Menei, instead of being written Mem Nun Aleph, the word is written Aleph Nun Mem. So again, in the same way with the other words, in the same way they said Nye. Rav Ashi Amar, Neman Namah Katal Posin. He says what they did is that what the Malach did is that he took the first letter of each word and switched it with the second letter. So Menei, Mem Nun Aleph, instead becomes Nun Mem Aleph. And the same way with the other one. So whatever it is, according Parasit means split. Means it actually has a double meaning. It means split, and it also represents Persia, Paras. Yeah.
Paras
is going to take over. Your kingdom is going to be split between Paras and Mada. Yeah.
Was one country?
Paras and Mada, they were originally two countries. By the time they conquered Babel, they were allied. They were two provinces of the same empire. The Gemara mentions in Megillah. So the Gemara mentions in Megillah that they made a deal between them that we're always going to have when the king is from one of these nations, then the noblemen are going to be from the other. We'll share the kingship. We'll share the rulership between us. In other words, so for example, it started off. Daryavesh was from Madai, and therefore the officers and noblemen of his kingdom were Persian. When Kurdish took over, he's from Persia. So then all the noblemen were from Madai, etc.
Madai
is Media. Well, they're both parts. They're both parts of Iran nowadays. No. Okay. Let's continue. The Mishnah says more dinim about a king. Ein roichven al suso, nobody is allowed to ride on his horse. Ein yoshven al kiso, nobody else can sit on his throne. Ein mishtamshin b'shavite, nobody else can use his scepter. The scepter, the stick that he holds over there, the famous one that Ahasuerus stuck out to Esther, for example, yeah. Ein roi nesek shu mistaper, nobody's allowed to see the king when he's getting a haircut. V'loik shu oroim, or when he's undressed, except the one who gives the haircut, I guess, yeah. V'loik shu oroim, not when he's undressed. V'loik shu b'beis ha-melchot, or when he's in the bathhouse. Shenema, the Pasuk says, Soim Tosim Alacha Melech. The Pasuk says you should place a king over yourself, implying Shetei Masi Alacha, you have to respect him. And if you see him getting a haircut or undressed or whatever, then you're going to lose respect for him. Now, so this that we're saying in the Mishnah that you can't use any of the king's things, like his horse or whatever, so that's going to lead to a description of a story at the beginning of Sefer Melachim. By the way, the Mephoshim point out on this basis, the Gemara mentions in a few places, for example, we're learning in Avodah Zarah, that the minhag in those days was that when a king died, they burnt all of his personal effects, and they'd take his horse that he rode on and hamstring it. They'd cut the tendon in its lower leg. Why do they do that? Because since nobody else is allowed to use it, no, it wouldn't kill the horse. It would make it lame. It couldn't walk properly anymore. But no.
Couldn't stand.
No, it could stand. It just couldn't run. But this way, it was meant out of respect for the king, to, as we were saying, you know, nobody else is ever allowed to ride on his horse or use any of these things. So therefore, yeah. Okay. So, at the beginning of Sefer Melachim, most of the story is in the Haftorah of Parshas Chayesara. We talked about it briefly in another context yesterday. It says like this. It starts off, Melach David Zaken Baba Yamim. David is getting very old, and he lost his body. They try to cover him with cloths and blankets, and he's not warming up. So they put their heads together. They come up with the idea, we need a young lady, a young unmarried girl, who will be his nursemaid, and will keep him warm with her body heat, basically. So they find this Avishag HaShunamit, and she becomes the king's personal maid. Shunamit means from the city of Shunam in Eretz Yisrael. Yeah, she was Jewish. Yeah. And she wasn't married yet. V'amelech lo yada, the pasuk says. The king didn't have relations with her, as we'll see in the Gemara, why not? Okay. Then the pasuk goes into the whole story of Adoniyahu's rebellion, and then the pasuk mentions that now when Adoniyahu was trying to make himself king, so nothing on Navi hears about it, he goes and tells Bathsheba, and David promised that your son, Shlomo, is going to be the next king. What's going on over here? So he tells her, I will go, and so he tells her, you and I should go separately to the king, and each of us will tell him in our own words what's going on, how Adoniyahu is trying to make himself king, and remind him about his promise that Shlomo is going to be king, and let him take action. And sure enough, each of them goes in separately. First Bathsheba comes, then Nathan comes, and then David says, yes, we've got to do something, and he immediately calls together his loyal people and tells them, I want you to immediately take Shlomo and anoint him as king while I'm still alive.
Adoniyahu was
one of David's older sons. We met him yesterday.
And he
must have
been able to kill
one
son.
Well, we'll see. Okay, so actually, so now there's a sequel to that story. Okay, so the upshot is Shlomo is anointed king. And once Adoniyahu and his people heard about it, the whole thing fell apart. They're all scared of going against David, so the whole thing fell apart.
First
Bathsheba goes to the king, then Nathan Anavi goes to the king. Yeah, Bathsheba is the mother of Shlomo.
Oh. That's his wife.
One of his wives. He had 18 wives, as we said yesterday.
Nice.
Okay. Now, there's a sequel to this, which is, after David passed away and Shlomo took over the kingship, one day Adoniyahu comes to Bathsheba. He says, I have a favor to ask you. Yeah? I'd like to marry Avishag. She says, okay, I'll go ask Shlomo. Avishag, this young lady who was David's personal assistant. Avishag, yeah. I'd like to marry Avishag. Bathsheba says, okay, I'll go ask Shlomo. He goes, Hold on. She wasn't David's wife, remember? Vamelech lo yada. David didn't have relations with her. So, wait. So she goes to ask Shlomo, and Shlomo reacts very sharply, and he says, if he's asking for that, it amounts to he's asking for the kingship.
Right.
Now,
right.
Why is that? Because we said in the Mishnah, right. In Mishnah, Shabbatai, you can't use the king's scepter or any personal thing that the king used. She's, in that sense, like a Shabbat, like something that the king used. So therefore, she was his personal valet or whatever. So yeah, so nothing doing, and Shlomo says, that's it. Obviously, Adoniyahu still has thoughts of rebellion. That's it. That's the end of him, and he hasn't busked. Now let's get to the Gemara.
If she was the wife of David,
then no, because we learned the other day the king of a wife is not allowed. The wife of a king is not allowed to marry another king. But she wasn't a Pelegish either. She wasn't a Pelegish either.
Well,
but
even father and son.
But if David didn't have relations with her, then yes, Shlomo could marry her if he wanted to.
Right.
He didn't. Adoniyahu figured that through this he can use that people will still see that he has pretensions to kingship or whatever. And so David, so Shlomo thought through that. And yeah.
But okay. If Shlomo killed him and his father did this, how did Shlomo take the initiative?
Because Shlomo realized that Adoniyahu was still a danger. David, as far as David was concerned, Adoniyahu's thing fell apart. There's no need to do anything further, but Shlomo has to be on the lookout.
What's Koyo when you're rebellion?
Murder Mafa, that's it. Okay.
And he was while David.
He wasn't going against David. He was conspiring to unseat Shlomo, not to unseat David. So he's not Murder Mafa. No, it's not. David was still going to be king. Okay. Anyway, we can talk about it afterwards. Let's get into the Gemara. Omer of Yaakov, Omer of Yeshman, Avishag, Mutedas, Lashlomo, Vastur, Ladonio. Avishag would have been mutter to Shlomo if he had chosen to marry her. She was also to Adoniyahu. And therefore, Taka, when Adoniyahu asked to marry her, then Shlomo reacted like that. Muteris was Shlomo the Melech, because Shlomo himself is a king, or Melech Meshtamish Meshavitah Shemelech. One king is allowed to use a scepter that belonged to the previous king. Avishag is like a scepter in that sense, because she was the king's personal assistant. Vastudal Adoniyah, the head Yitru, because Adoniyahu is a commoner, so therefore she's also to him. Avishag Maihi, what's the story with Avishag? Dichtiv, so the pasuk starts off in Melachim, Vamelech David Zakim Baba Yomim with them. Doesn't matter. We learned the other day that a son of a king has no difference in it. There's no difference in halacha between him and any other person in the kingdom. It doesn't matter. He's still not a king. Plus, it says, Vamelech David Zakim Baba Yomim with them, Vayomim Le'avod Yivakshu with them, he can't warm up, so his servant said, let's find a beautiful girl, and she'll be your personal assistant. Uchtiv Vayivakshu Na'ari Yofu with them, Uchtiv Vanari Yofu Admaud, says she was very beautiful. Vatil Amelech Sechenes, so she warmed up the king, Vatishar Seyo, and she served him. So, thus far the pasuk. Now let's get into the background of the shiri.
She has relations with him?
Omra, she acts, she tells him, Nintzavah, marry me. Omra lo, he says, no, I can't, seriously. You're also to me, because he already had 18 wives.
Omra
lo, so she says to him, kind of sarcastically, Chasre leganva nafshe, Chasre leganva, when the ganav is no longer able to steal, Nafshila Shlomo Nakut, and he pretends to be he can't find anywhere to steal. He pretends to be a peaceful guy.
Meaning him?
Meaning, in other words, no. She's saying to David, in other words, by the same logic, you're claiming you can't marry me and have relations with me because you already have 18 wives. Yeah, we know the truth that you're old and you've lost your powers. So therefore, you're pretending to be frum like that, and now, how does she have the chutzpah to talk to him like that? Let's learn the next line, and then we'll talk about what the Aruch HaNer says on it. Okay. Anyway, Amar Lahu, so David says, Kiruli the Bathsheba, as the Pasuk says, he says, summon Bathsheba for me. Now, in context, the Pasuk is saying summon Bathsheba because he wanted to hear from her the report about what's happening with Adoniyahu and Shlomo. But we're saying also, and Marsha points out, the Pasuk, when it says that Bathsheba came, it mentions in the Pasuk that Avishag is assisting the king, implying there's some connection because Avishag is there, therefore Bathsheba has called in, so he had a double meaning in calling in Bathsheba. Namely, Yuchdiv, the Pasuk says, Vatova Bathsheba al Melech HaChadra, it says that Bathsheba came into the king's room, and Amar of Yehuda Amaran, Ba'oisesha, Kincha Bathsheba, Bashloisha Sirmachos. Afterwards, Bathsheba had to wipe herself 13 times because he had 13 times beer. In other words, David wants to demonstrate, not like Avishag thinks that I don't have the power anymore. No, I still have the power. And if I'm not marrying her and not having relations with her, not like you think because I don't have the koyach anymore, but rather because Halacha says I'm also. Now, what's going on over here? What does David have to do? No, of course not, but still, it shows. No. So what is actually going on over here?
But I don't understand. If that's the case, then why do you have to have a girl to keep him warm? Why the wife couldn't keep him still? But do the same thing.
What about? But apparently, it didn't help with warming him up. He still has the koyach to be able to have beer, but not necessarily.
But his own wife does not do the same
apparently
thing.
Apparently not. They needed the body heat of a basola. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, what's going on over here? So the Aruch HaNer says an interesting idea. The Rambam says, how do we know that a person has done complete shuvah for an avera if he's in the exact same situation and he has the ability to still do it and he has the taiva to still do it and he doesn't do it, then we know his shuvah is complete. After the whole story of how David originally married Bathsheba, for the rest of his life he was doing shuvah on it for having taken her originally in a way that's not necessarily so kosher. So from then on, for example, now when he has Avishag over there, he has the ability to demonstrate that his tshuva is complete. That here he has a beautiful girl over there.
Avishag was allowed.
No, she's not, because he has 18 wives.
Avishag could have had a relationship.
If he has 18 wives. I should mention, actually, I mean, the Rambam understands, we talked about this yesterday, that the Rambam understands the limit of 18 includes wives and kolagshim. So therefore, you couldn't even make her a pilagish, because then it would still go over 18. The Ravid understands that you could have 18 wives, you could have as many kolagshim as you want. Why didn't he make her a pilagish? The answer is, the Ram says, because she didn't want to be a pilagish. She wants to be a full wife or nothing. So therefore...
Yeah, she had that. Yeah.
So therefore,
so wait a minute.
One second. Let's finish. So therefore, right. Okay. So therefore, the Aruch HaNer says, can I continue, please? The Aruch HaNer says, therefore, that she's telling him don't think you're doing, don't think you're showing that your children are complete over here. You're not doing it because you don't have the kayach. So he demonstrates with Bathsheba, I do have the kayach. Therefore, the fact that I have you around and I'm not doing it, because it also shows that my children are taka as complete as possible.
But can it also mean that, you know what, I'll take you as a pilegish, but not as a wife?
And according to the Ravid, he would have been allowed to, but she's saying, I don't want. Okay. Now, what about, isn't there another possibility, which is what the Gemara is going to start discussing now? Couldn't he have divorced one of the other 18 and then he should marry Avisha? Amr of Shaman Ba'aba, Boy Rei, Kamakoshin Gerishin, come look how harsh it is to divorce. We see the Chachamim of that time gave David a heter for Yichud, which we learned yesterday that Yichud was also became also after the whole story with Amnon and Tamar, but still they gave him a special heter in this case to be in Yichud together with Avishag, even though she also to him, and they didn't give him permission to divorce one of his wives. So we see how harsh it is to divorce. So in this connection, Amar Rabbi Yezer, call him a garish as ishter v'shoina, a man who divorces his first wife, after the mizbeach murdered all of demois, even the mizbeach cries for him. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Zois shenis tasu." This is the second thing that you're doing. Previously, the pasuk is describing another negative thing the Jewish people are doing in that time. So here's another one: "Kasois zima as mizbech Hashem b'chiva anaka." You're causing the mizbeach of Hashem to be covered with tears and with crying and moaning. Me'enoid pnois al mincha, to the point that Eibishter doesn't want to turn to your mincha, to your korban, to your korbanos anymore. V'lakachas rotin miyedchem, or to take any to accept favorably any korban from you. Ochtiv, and the next pasuk thing is v'amartem al mos. You say, why? What are we doing wrong? The reason is alki Hashem heid beincha uven eishes. The Eibishter is testifying about what's going on between you and the wife of your youth. Asher ata bagadtaba, that you're being treacherous, you're being disloyal to her. V'chavertecha v'eishes b'risecha, and she's your friend and the wife of your covenant.
And so she wants to be worse.
In those times, first of all, there's no such thing. I mean, in halacha, only a man has the
day.
Even you have to claim to have an agershim, it needs to be with her consent. But still, we've talked before that Amram holds that if a woman says Mo Salayim, that's reason enough for divorce. The halacha is not like that. But we're talking about the problem was in those times that there were men who the problem was that there were they wanted to divorce their wives and marry goites, whatever. So yeah. Okay.
But you cannot withhold a wife if she doesn't want to be with you for the rest of your life. I mean, it's not possible.
It's possible. Just
it would should be called a meret. Should be called the murder. That's what we learned in him about it in Ksubas, that they know about what happened. Amar of Yechon and Vitei Merav Elazar, Ein Ishta, Shalot and Mesa, Elev came and Vakshu Men and Momen Ve'en Boy. A man's wife dies only if money is being demanded of him and he doesn't have what to, and he doesn't have what to pay. What kind of money are we talking about? Rashi, this Gemara has brought also in Zvachim. Rashi talks over there about that it means if a person stole, for example, he doesn't have what to pay back. So the Edishtim, they punish him by having his wife pass away. Tosfos over there talks about not necessarily stealing. It can also mean, for example, he borrowed money, or he doesn't have what to pay it back. Or he made a neder for tzedakah, for example, and he doesn't have it, and he doesn't pay it back. So then
that's the famous story about the neder for tzedakah, and the husband wants to kill his wife, and then the rabbi says, well, you have to love her in order that.
So I'll tell you. Yes, I just read that. So let's learn the pasuk, and then I'll tell you the background of that. Yeah. Shenema, as a pasuk says, "V'im ein lecha l'shalom." The pasuk says, "If you don't have what to pay, lama yikach mishkav chamitatecha." Why should he take away the one with whom you lie from underneath you, meaning your wife? Now, so the story you're talking about is the Malbim, where one time a masculine asked him that, yeah, I have a horrible wife, therefore I'm always making the Jordan and not paying them, because I'm hoping she'll die, like the Gemara is saying over here, and it doesn't work. What's going on? The Malbim tells him, you know, you have Matza or Moitze. You have the famous Gemara that Matza, you have a good wife, Matza, and Matza Isha Matza Toib, and you have a bad wife, Moitze Ani Mami Mavase Isha. Matza has a comet which is under the letter. Moitze has a cholim, which is over the letter. Pasuk is saying over here, Mitachtech. If you want, when does it happen? When does it happen that Mavakshin men a woman vainloy and the Eibishter can make his wife die, Rahman al Islam, is when she's mitachtecha, when she's a matza, a good wife. Yours is a moitza type of wife, because it doesn't work. Okay. Onward. By the way, I mean, you know, they talk about the Baal and Musa talk about this. I mean, first, you know, a person for her to die, it can't be that she herself is completely innocent. Also, it has to be that obviously the Eibishter wouldn't make it happen just because of her husband's averus. It has to be that there's some other reason that she needs to leave the world also. But first, when the Eibishter's justice always involves, the Eibishter always, unlike human judges, always takes into account what the other people are going to feel from it, and therefore, from the husband's point of view, that he feels that he's keenly that he's losing his wife. Can be because of it. Okay. When a man's first wife died, this Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in his time. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Eibishter says to Yechezkel ben Adam, Hinni lekeach minchas machman einecha b'magefa, behold, I'm going to take away from you the beloved one of your eyes, meaning your wife, in a plague. The Eibishter tells him, v'leisivkeh, v'leisivkeh, you shouldn't mourn, you shouldn't cry, v'leisavet yimasecha, don't, your tears should not come. There's meant to be a simon that the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed and the Jewish people are not going to be in Avelus because everybody's going to have the same problem. Avelus is the that other people should sympathize with you like this. Everybody's going to be in the same boat. Uchdiv, and a few psukim later, it says, v'adabra la'am b'boker, I spoke to the people in the morning, v'tomas ishti b'erev, my wife died that evening. Uchdiv, and then afterwards, the Eibishter explains, hinini mechalas mikdashi, behold, I'm going to desecrate my Beis HaMikdash, go'in uchem, the pride of your strength, machmad enechem, the beloved thing of your eyes. So we see, in other words, that a man's wife dying, Yechezkel's wife dying, is compared to the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. Amar of Alexandria, call Adam Shemesa Ishtabiyamov, of a man whose wife dies during his time, Olam Choshach Bade, the world becomes dark for him. Shenema, the Pasuk says, Ur Choshach Ba'aloi, the Pasuk says, the light becomes dark in his tent, Aloi means his wife, Aloi means his wife, we find by Masurda that after, during the stage of his tarot, there's a period over there that he has to stay michut la'aloi, outside of his tent. Shivas Yomim doesn't mean literally that he can't go home, it means he can't have relations with his wife. Veneira olav yidach, and his candle becomes dim. So we see that like it becomes dark for him. Rabbi Yosef Bachanina, I'm a psiosef miskatsuris. Rabbi Yosef Bachanina says also his steps become shorter, like he's not able to walk as well as before. Shenema, the next pasuk continues, also an E over there. Yates with Sade Ono, the steps of his strength become narrower. Rabbi Bohu, I'm a tzotza nefelis. Rabbi Bohu says also his advice falls apart, his ability. Psiosef is Lashon Chazal. Tzade is Lashon Tanakh. Rabbi Bohu says that also his advice falls apart. Shenema, as that pasuk continues in here, but Sashlichehu Atzotze, his advice, his ability to think of the right thing, is cast away.
His wife.
Once his wife passes away, then he loses the ability to think properly. Omer Rav Bar Bachana Omer Yechanan. Now, on the other hand, when it comes to making a shidduch in the first place, koshal zavgam kriyas yamsu, to get a husband and wife together in the first place is as difficult, is as great a feat as kriyas yamsu. Shenema, the pasuk says, "Kim Moshe b'chidim b'isa." The Eibishter makes individuals into a house. Motzi asirim b'koshores. He brings out prisoners in koshores. Koshores, Rashi explains, and on the pasuk over there means the proper. One meaning of it has changed, but Rashi explains that it actually means in the season when it's good to go. Meaning in the springtime when the weather is pleasant, as opposed to David didn't take him out of Mitzrayim in the heat of the summer or the freezing cold of the winter. And Altikri Moti Asirim Ela Kimoti Asirim. Don't read the pasuk that the Eibishter takes out prisoners, but life taking out prisoners. Altikri Bakeshores Ela Bechi Veshiris. And the word Bakeshores can be understood as Bechi Veshiris, crying and singing, which is what happened at Kriyas Yamsu. The Jewish people first are crying, that was stuck over there, and then they're singing at the end. So we see there's a comparison between a Zivug and Kriyas Yamsu. One of the ideas is because it depends on the ma'isim of the people involved, just like it depended on the ma'isim of the Jewish people. Okay. So the question is, Amy, is that so? That's such a difficult thing. Well, 40 days before a baby is formed, in other words, that's conception, Baskel comes out and says the daughter of Pliny is going to marry Pliny. So what do you mean it's so difficult? The answer is like Kasha, Hab Zivug Rishon, Hab Zivug Sheni. There's a difference between the first Zivug and the second. On the surface, Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni means exactly what it sounds like. A couple's first marriage versus their second. The first one is based is a Boy Mian series of blood. The second one is based on their bite. In Sifrei Kabbalah, it talks about, though, that not necessarily. Sometimes you can have that the one that actually chronologically ends up being the first marriage is not necessarily the Zivug Rishon. It could be that a person may end up missing who their proper Zivug, who their proper Basherta is, and they only find them later. So it can happen. It can happen that a one person marries first might end up that it turns out it wasn't the Zivug Rishon after all. It turns out, retroactively, eventually, they find somebody else, and it turns out that one was the Zivug Sheni. And it was according to their mice. Amr of Shmuel Ben Nachman, Lakol Yesh Tmura Chutz Me'eshes Ne'urim. for anything else in the world as a replacement except for the wife of one's youth. Shenema v'eshes ne'urim pisimai. So the pasuk says, the Eishes says, how I could never reject the Jewish people. The wife of one's youth can't be rejected. And by the way, when we said before that if a man divorces his first wife, then even the Mizbeach cries for him, one reason Mefarshim say is based on this pasuk over here. We're saying that the Eivishta compares the relationship between him and us to a relationship between a man and his first wife, that it can never be, it's very difficult to break. So therefore, if a man too easily divorces his first wife, it amounts to saying, therefore, by the same logic, the Eivishta and the Jewish people can be separated, and that's that. So that's why it's such a serious thing.
He's probably more like him.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow.
Maybe we'll start earlier.